Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. Dennis Fuller producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is on Tuesdays and Fridays, is, of course, the host of VSiN Primetime. Also, make sure you check out the Saturday tailgate show over at VSiN. It's VSiN's college football tailgating show. Starts at 9 a.m. our time. 9 a.m. Central, I guess I should technically say. You can also follow him on Twitter, on X, at 1TimMurray. Don't forget the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim, good day, sir.
What is up, Mr. Jeffrey Wright? How are you?
Tim, I need winners this week. Let's leave it at that. This is the closest we've been to retiring in September ever.
Don't we all, man? I don't know about you, but I was up late on Saturday night watching Liberty get a backdoor cover against East Carolina.
They are farting around, aren't they?
To anger me to the highest level because I had ECU. I'm also putting out a tweet right now, just going full sicko mode on how bad Kent State football is. But yeah, man, I could use some winners. The NFL, the stinky lines, the big dogs, as we saw last night. Well, one of the two, obviously Buffalo was very much the right side, and I know you were happy about that. But the NFL has been where the dogs have barked. The college ranks, not as much. Like my situational spots, some have come home. Unfortunately, to the listenership in Memphis, Navy was one of those big-time situational spots that I pointed out. Hell, I pointed it out over the damn summer. Like that was just a great spot. Yeah, it's been a weird start to the college football season for me from a betting standpoint.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair. We'll get into that in a little bit. I also want to get Tim's thoughts on, of course, the news yesterday broke right before our show that Memphis and others from the American were I don't even know if you'd say declining the invite because of the semantics of it. And they did not get invited, but they could have been invited, but they are spurning the Pac-12. We then get this weird, like Monday night of like, it felt like, honestly, I told my wife, it felt like a sorority that was trying to meet quota. And like, they just kept getting rejected from bids and bids and bids. And like, they were just searching for any and everyone. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Wanted to also talk the implications of the Navy loss. We don't really have to get into the game necessarily, although I think the important thing is, I think you'd agree, because this is someone that, you know, used to be part of the broadcast program for Navy, but this looks like good Navy, more so than we've seen in a while.
100%. And yeah, I won't go too deep into it, but this looks like Malcolm Perry,
yeah,
Keenan Reynolds Navy, you know, early years in the AAC Navy, you know, where we had Thursday night games between Navy and Memphis that were, you know, top 25 games. I mean, this looks like a really good Navy team, and that's why I think this weekend is such an interesting one from the Navy standpoint, where it's kind of a sandwich spot. You're going to UAB, you're a 3.5-point favorite, you got Air Force on deck, which is, you know, the second most important game of their season. But yeah, no, Blake Horvath and this offensive coordinator, Drew Kronick, look like good Navy. I mean, and it looks like decent Army, too. We'll find out more about them. So it looks like the two service academies.
Well, weirdly, the one that looks the worst to me is Air Force.
Oh, Air Force is awful right now.
Yeah.
They can't score. They have no offense. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think as frustrating as I'm sure it was for all Memphis fans to watch Saturday unfold, I don't think that's going to – look, it's not a good loss because you lost, and the margin for error to make the group of five – get the group of five bid is small. But I don't think it's going to be like catastrophic, we lost to Temple. Like Navy's going to be a bowl team. They're going to win. They're going to win some games. And I'll tell you what, man, as a Notre Dame fan, seeing good Navy, I'm scared about that game in mid-October in MetLife Stadium.
So we will get into all of that. Also, we'll hand out our awards for week four of college football. We'll hand those out as we do each and every week. We'll get into the list during hour number two. Tony Allen, we have the official date of when he will have his jersey retired, so we'll tell you about that. Want to get into a few other headline newsy things, and then want to get back into the NFL when we also, during the second hour, a couple of big topics I want to discuss. We'll get into whether or not this is as nuts of an NFL season as it's being, I guess, promoted as, because I think there's a few interesting things about it. So we'll tell you about that. But I think let's start first with the news of yesterday. And I wanted to get your reaction, from what your friends out west were saying. I broke it down as simply as this. We didn't even have to get into some type of, you know, I don't know if you'd call it a moral, but like right versus wrong decision, you know, it was like armchair quarterbacking. When the detail from Ross Dellinger's story came out that the exit fee was likely to be $25 million and that the Pac-12 was only offering $2.5 million for the exit fee, I mean, to me, it was like open and shut. There you go. That is why Memphis, Tulane, South Florida. I'm still not as convinced that I think UTSA might have a good publicist. And I think they were getting their name out there pretty well, but I'm not as convinced. I'm not saying they had no shot, but I don't think they were in the same category as the other teams. But that's why they say no. And then further, like, I know there's some other legal obligations and whatnot, but they were trying to go through the whole Mountain West Rolodex, and even they were like, we think we're cool over here.
This whole thing, you know, obviously to bring it more local initially, it's so odd to me because it felt like when the Pac-12 made this strike, like in the, you know, to use like a military reference,
yeah,
it was shock dark out, and they were like, boom, we're going to take your four best teams, Mountain West, and then we're going to poach some others. And, you know, when we had John Canzano on the show a week ago, it felt like, yeah, this thing's going to happen. Memphis is going to go, Tulane's going to go, and maybe UNLV's going to go. And then I, you know, not living in Memphis, when I saw the news initially come out that Memphis was staying, I was like, huh, that doesn't seem like the best move for them as an institution, knowing they're, at the time, Brett McMurphy had put out a report saying that Gonzaga was coming, which has been refuted to a point. Brett hasn't, you know, whatever. I don't know what's going to happen with Gonzaga. It doesn't seem like an open and shut case. But it felt like the Pac-12, the way we were talking about last week, had their stuff together.
Yeah.
Right now, it feels like they don't know what the hell they're doing. And the bigger thing for me, to make it more broad, is why would Boise State jump on board like this? If was the wool kind of pulled over their eyes a little bit?
So I think it's a couple of things. Number one, I think let's start right there with the wool pulled over their eyes. I think so, because it seemed to me, and John mentioned this when we interviewed him last week, part of the reason why it feels like the Pac-12 is able to move quickly is they basically only have two ADs or schools, you know, that are involved, and so they can kind of like attack and go. And I think the other thing with Boise is Boise has long felt that the bottom of the Mountain West has held them back, and it's kept them from getting more and more. And here was our opportunity to jump, leave those people. I'm sure the plan that was presented to them was, hey, and then we're going to go poach Memphis. We're going to poach Tulane. We're going to poach all the best of the rest, and this is going to be a better league. All the things that you've been complaining about, the bottom of your league, you know, tearing you down and holding you down, that's going to go away. And I think that's exactly what they wanted to hear. But it also doesn't seem like they looked that far underneath the hood.
It felt, yeah, it feels like right now, after they were able to get Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and San Diego State to come aboard, they were going to be like, all right, we're going to sit back. We're going to, as you pointed out, we're going to poach three really quality programs. Maybe we get a Gonzaga, and we're going to be sitting in a good spot. And as John said, be the fifth best conference and kind of own that. But now you're looking at this thing and you're like, if you're Boise State, are you having buyer's remorse?
Like, well, it seems to me like they're all kind of looking into, Hey, is there a way, like, because I guess let's actually backtrack before that. You know what I think is really the biggest problem? Oregon State and Washington State having to come to grips with reality. And to me, I understand that there were financial reasons for why they didn't want to go to the Mountain West, because if they left, then all of a sudden that money that was in the war chest, like, they lose the right to that. So there were financial reasons. Oregon State had just built the new, you know, redone their stadium, and I'm sure they were cash strapped. Wazoo, I think, had capital campaigns as well. So I understand it, but that also kind of distracts from another reason why they didn't really want to go to the Mountain West. They think they're above it. And yeah. I think what we saw this week was actually, over the last 2 weeks, was kind of Oregon State and Washington State realizing, okay, we don't want to be in the Mountain West. We don't want to be in the American, because they could have been in either. But we'll form our own thing, keep our logos, and we'll take the best of the rest, and they'll just go along with it. And I think when you present the idea like that, everyone's like, okay, that sounds pretty good. But then when you find out, hey, we've got these massive exit fees and you're basically offering to pay 10% of it, like, why would we do that?
Right. And I think, too, because, on the surface, if things are easy, Memphis, if you want to include Tulane, whatever, but just looking at it from a Memphis standpoint, wouldn't you rather be in a football conference that has Boise State in it, that has Oregon and Washington State in it, a basketball conference that has San Diego State, who was a runner-up in the national championship, maybe Gonzaga, Boise State. I mean, hell, you throw in Utah State with their success recently in college basketball as well. But from the financial standpoint of knowing travel's going to be a pain in the you-know-what, financially not having the money or not really getting much money to get out of this, yeah, it makes it... I'd be curious to know what folks in Memphis are feeling right now that more details are coming out, and now that it feels like the Pac-12 didn't have their stuff together. Like, a week ago, we came away with that discussion with John Canzano saying, okay, Memphis goes there, it makes all the sense in the world, they'll probably get a pretty decent television deal in 2026. This is great. You know, let make this happen. You know, Memphis, Tulane, I think at the time we were talking about UNLV, maybe Gonzaga. And now you're looking at it and you're like, is the Pac-12 appealing if it has to go? It's got Utah State now, maybe UNLV. Now there's legal stuff being involved. It almost feels like Memphis, well, initially it felt like it was the wrong decision. Maybe in the long term, this is the right decision. And what you brought up, I think, last week, Jeffrey, which is important, now if some things happen with the ACC... The ACC, my guess would be their first call is going to be to Memphis.
Presuming that they can't get someone else from another league. And at that point, it becomes the Big 12. Because right. There's no one in their right mind that's leaving the Big 10 or the SEC.
No, not with the money that is out there right now. So, I mean, and who knows? I mean, if you're the ACC, I don't know if... I think Memphis makes sense. Even if they don't lose Florida State and Clemson, which that, you know, with the new things that are kind of coming out, it seems more likely that Clemson and Florida State are hanging around for another 5 or 6 years until who knows what's going to happen. So, you know, when this all came out so fast yesterday, I was like, what is Memphis doing? This seems like a poor choice. Now, I think it was the right choice, knowing that they would have had to, foot $22 million by themselves to get out of this AAC agreement.
Yeah, and so basically the way that it was phrased was, would you have paid $22 million in the fall, or, you know, last year, would you have paid $22 million to go to the Mountain West? And that's basically what you'd be doing. Like, it's Mountain West Plus, let's be real. Like, it's a good league. It's a more competitive league. It's a better league. But when you factor in everything, still no TV deal, there's a lot of questions, like, it kind of is a no-brainer, and that's kind of led everyone to the same conclusion, which is...
That said, though, if the Gonzaga... Now, we don't know if this Gonzaga news is real. Once again, Brett McMurphy, who I know well and I trust, he reported it. It was refuted by others. Who knows? But let's just play the game that Gonzaga, San Diego State, we know they're in. I mean, FedEx Forum, having Gonzaga come in every year, having San Diego State come in every year, some of those other Pac-12 schools that have had some high highs, Colorado State, Boise State, etc., from a basketball standpoint, those would have been some pretty fantastic games. So I think there's a bit of a bummer factor there, but I just think from a logistical and logical factor, Memphis staying makes sense.
Yeah, I think the overwhelming sentiment was people were understanding. It still kind of was a bummer. And I think this is kind of the larger question. Like, I don't know how you phrase it but the thought is, did you sign off your own future fate? Not you, Memphis, everybody. Because it feels to me like now you're going to have two leagues that are basically going to be competing for the same space and fewer dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this whole thing with the kind of the best non-Power Four conference is kind of wacky. And, I mean, it feels like this whole Mountain West Pac-12 saga is going to be very, very messy. I was texting with someone with a current Mountain West program yesterday, and he basically alluded to the fact that he felt like the Pac-12 didn't know what was going on. Like, they were just, like, shooting from the hip. And now, you know, what do they do next? Utah State apparently has signed their deal, so now they've got seven schools in, so they need one more. The UNLV thing, UNLV yesterday apparently said, yeah, we're staying with the Mountain West. And then I was reading Ross Dellinger's article today where essentially I think this whole league can just say, we're done. They can all just, like, it can just dissolve. So we might get to that point too, which is just gonna, you know, it's just gonna get really weird, like New Mexico, Wyoming.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's
Hawaii.
Like, okay, who else for sure? Because
it's pretty clear. I picked up on this. It's pretty clear the Pac-12 doesn't want Wyoming, doesn't want New Mexico, doesn't want Hawaii. Like, that's pretty obvious.
And it seems to me like they don't really want Nevada, but they'll take them.
Right. I don't know why they don't want Nevada. I kind of am missing there. They've got a good basketball program. Their football program stinks, but it used to be good. Like, it could get back to it. I don't know the finances and all of that. Reno is not a small city. Like, it's not huge.
I've been told it's the world's biggest small city. Or what is it? World's biggest little city?
Yeah, something like that. I've been there a couple times. It's got some Bay Area money, I'll tell you that. Not too far away from Tahoe. Not that Tahoe's got a ton of people there, but
it does have a lot of Silicon Valley money.
There you go. I don't know. It does. I mean, once again, I bring this back to where we're on right now, and with all this mess unfolding, it kind of feels like Memphis is like, you know what? We're good. We'll stay here and we'll take on South Florida, and maybe we get Air Force to come in from.
But then didn't they sign on? Like,
well, no. So the deal. So apparently, if Utah State had stayed with the Mountain West, this would be done. Like, all eight of those schools would be in. There would be a grant of rights deal, all of that. But because Utah State has signed now with the Pac-12, there's only seven institutions now, and there's some legal stuff that essentially says the schools can, like, almost agree to dissolve the conference.
Right, but then the question becomes, what is the number? Because if you're one of those schools that we just mentioned, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Hawaii, although Hawaii's got this weird reality of what their football Mountain West and then their Big West,
everything else, yeah.
And then I think the whole reason they don't want Hawaii is because the league has to foot the bill, for a lot of the travel, because I had a buddy that used to coach at a Big West program, and he's like, the league has to pick up the tab for a lot of the travel for them for basketball and whatnot. So the question then becomes, because this was always thought to be a strategy for the ACC. I believe the ACC, I think it took 15 members, and then Notre Dame has a voting share. Do I have that right?
Yes.
So I think it took 9 to dissolve the league, and there was always the thought of, well, you can't owe money to something that you dissolve. But then the question was, would there be 9 teams that would get scooped up by better? Essentially, you have to have 9 teams that are going to get scooped up by the SEC or the Big Ten, because even though the future of the ACC feels flimsier than the future of the Big 12, the Big 12 TV deal is roughly $15 million per school less. So there was always the thought, if you can get enough votes to dissolve the league, everybody would be free to go. The problem was getting 9 schools that were willing to do that was tough, because it got pretty close at one point. I think people forget that one. There was a summer where it actually got close, and then I think NC State swung back.
So I'm reading the Dellinger article right now. So they would need 9 of the 12 football members to vote to dissolve the conference. And obviously, the 4 that have already left, the 5 that have already left, would vote to dissolve the conference.
Right.
Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, Fresno State, Utah State. If Air Force goes to the AAC, they would be the 6th. If UNLV goes to the Pac-12, they would be the 8th. So you would essentially need 2 of the 5, Wyoming, Hawaii, San Jose State, Nevada, and New Mexico, to say, yeah, we vote to dissolve this conference.
And then you basically tell Nevada, you bring in Nevada to the Pac-12 to appease the government issue in Nevada, and then that gets you your vote.
Yeah, them are, yeah, and I guess you could, San Jose State too, I guess you could.
And then I would have to imagine you are inviting all sorts of collusion legal arguments.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's going to be messy. And I saw something from like Steve Palazzolo from, he used to be at PFF, now he's at the 33rd team. And I've had Steve on my show before. I like Steve. But he essentially was like, this is why college football sucks, because we're talking realignment. I don't think we really... I mean, we are doing it here because it involves Memphis.
Yes.
But, like, I just recorded my podcast. Granted, it's a betting podcast, but I didn't reference any of this realignment stuff. I saw Josh Pate, you know, on Twitter say that he's not going to be talking about realignment. Like, it's...
He will
it's
talk to Hugh Freeze and give him a nice PR form. Go ahead, Josh. Do you?
But I don't know. I mean, I understand how realignment. Look, let's take a step back.
All right.
Realignment sucks. It sucks. I wish the Pac-12 was still the Pac-12, and I wish that the Big Ten was still, you know, was what it was. I don't like it, but it's the nature of the beast, and you know, you just kind of have to roll with the punches as they are. I mean, some realignment moves have been interesting.
Well, like, I don't know, it's complicated. In general, I'm with you. It sucks.
But
I did watch USC. USC,
we had
Michigan.
USC in the Big House,
yeah.
And that was pretty cool.
And like, I had Oklahoma and Tennessee. Like, you know, we're going to get Texas and Alabama. I know we've seen it in a non-conference, but we're getting it right. Like, it's one of those situations that I
like
think...
Seeing Stanford at Syracuse on a Friday night in a conference game, that was weird.
Yes.
But
it was a fun game.
But seeing USC at Michigan in a conference game, that was pretty cool. Like, everyone jumped to, and I did it too. Like, next Saturday night, Miami's at Cal in a ACC game. That's pretty weird.
At 9:30 Central Time or whatever, 10:30 Eastern.
It is the late night Dave Fleming special.
We do agree, though. There's nothing more Pac-12 after dark than a offensive, you know, an air raid team trying to score on Justin Wilcox's team at 9:30 Central.
Yeah. So, like,
with half empty Memorial Stadium.
If not more. I mean, those are two weird fan bases. Well, Cal is just weird in itself. And then Miami, like, do they really have a fan base? You know, they
have a TV audience.
Yeah. They're like Georgetown basketball a little bit. So, you know, I bring it back to where I'm from. Like, people would think, because Georgetown, especially at their peak in the 80s and early 90s when Big John was crushing it, that Georgetown was like the talk of the town. Nope. Because Georgetown's not a local university. It's a national, worldwide university. The local university is Maryland. Same could be said to like Duke in North Carolina. I was so surprised when I was a kid, shockingly, I was a Duke fan.
Did you learn the error of your ways?
I removed the Duke fandom when I got the
high school. Because Mark hasn't.
I have not. I removed that. I figured liking Notre Dame football and Duke basketball, I wanted to have some friends in life, so I needed to get rid of one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But like my brother went to college in North Carolina, and it was 2002 in the Final Four. Duke was playing Maryland, and we went to like a bar restaurant, and I was stunned when 100% of the restaurant was cheering for Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're all North Carolina State fans. Like, so... You know, that's kind of what I feel like with Miami a little bit, because it's got the brand, it's the U, but it's a private school. It's, you know, it's got its history, but as we've seen from games down at the, you know, it's not the Orange Bowl anymore. Where do they play now?
I think what's now officially Hard Rock Stadium. It's,
right.
I think it's had as many names.
So remember when it was Landshark Stadium and no money was exchanged? They just like,
so
Jimmy Buffett do like two concerts there.
It started as what, Joe Robbie.
Yep.
Then, yeah, right. There was Landshark in there. There's a Hard Rock. There was another Sun Life, maybe. I think it was a Sun Life Stadium at one point. That thing's had almost as many names as the Oakland Coliseum. I don't have Wi-Fi right now in the studio, so this
I'm looking.
This is kind of difficult because I've done this game. I think it was Sun Life at one point. I think it's actually consistently been Hard Rock for at least now 5+. Whenever they did that last renovation, it's been Hard Rock. So we're probably, the sad thing is it's probably approaching a decade, but I'm just getting older, and so I can't mark time like I used to.
Wikipedia is letting me down right now. I thought it would have all the names. Oh, here we go. I got it. Joe Robbie, Pro Player Park.
Yeah, I was trying to think. There was one of Pro Player.
Player Stadium for about a decade. So it was Joe Robbie for a decade, Pro Player Stadium for a decade, then Dolphin Stadium for 1 year, Dolphin singular for 4 years, then Landshark Stadium, then back to Dolphin, then Sun Life for about 6-7 years, and then Hard Rock since 2016.
So the real glaring miss was I miss Pro Player. And that's because that was, man, that is the other thing. Like, remember the good old days of the NFL when you would just have, for the months of September and October, half the stadiums just had infields?
Yeah. Oh, God. Like, I used to always play with the Raiders in Madden because I thought it was so cool that they had the baseball stadium on the Madden.
And before, like, AT&T was built, you had Candlestick. There was also nothing.
I mean,
quite
all of those garbage stadiums with the cement floors.
Yeah,
all the cookie cutters, Three Rivers, Synergy, Veterans,
Bush,
the Meadowlands. I mean, they were all just garbage,
Yeah. All right.
RFK Stadium to an extent.
Oh yes, definitely with RFK. All right. The other thing that I wanted to discuss with you before we get into our weekly awards. So. The other thing that is clearly going to be a topic of conversation is how do you process Memphis losing to Navy? Because on the one hand, you can probably sit there and reasonably say, if you're going to get shredded like that by Navy, you're not running the table. And if you have that position, I don't think that is, I think that's a perfectly reasonable stance to have. I do kind of look at that game a little bit differently, and maybe it's because I've been talking to you since the summer. But I looked at that game like Navy had a bye week to prepare. They had 2 weeks of being, you know, as vanilla as humanly possible, and they came out and they unloaded the clip, and they played really well, and you kind of got buzzsawed. And despite that, you did still have the ball inside of Navy territory with a chance to win the game. And yeah, your senior quarterback makes a mistake, But, like, in spite of all that, there was a universe where Memphis wins that game. And so, I, you know what I mean? Like, aren't we talking about Memphis differently? If Navy plays like that and Memphis, like, let's say Memphis finishes that drive, scores, and wins the game, like, that's sitting there going, like, that's what good teams do. Like, they, you know, to quote our boys from the Oregon Penn State podcast.
Solid verbal.
They won their clunker.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't a clunker. I think it was more Navy played well. But there's also the reality of you see JMU hanging 70 on North Carolina. You see UNLV continue to win. And you feel like Boise's loss against Oregon is now respectable. And so you feel like you've just been completely eliminated from that. I just don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot of football left.
I totally agree. And no, I let's start with the Navy standpoint, right? Where I'm sure folks are still licking the wounds of that loss, and I totally understand it. But as I continue to harp on the situation, let's be honest. Memphis played Florida State the week prior. I know Florida State stinks this year, but that was the game they were gearing up for all offseason long. They won that game. It was going to be a built-in letdown spot. Preparing for Navy sucks. It does. You know, you have to start preparations in the summer, and they brought in a new offensive coordinator in Drew Kronick, and they're putting out some wrinkles that I've never seen them put out before with the triple option, right? And they've got a quarterback who looks to be the part in Blake Horvath. If they play Navy later on in the year, I'm not guaranteeing that they would win it, but I feel a little bit more confident in that. But the thing, you could look at it from the standpoint that you had, which is UNLV continues to win. They didn't play last weekend, but they're undefeated. However, UNLV plays Fresno State this weekend at home, where they're only a four-point favorite. They play Syracuse at home against a Power Four program that, you know, did lose this weekend to Stanford, but is a decent Power Four program with a quarterback in Kyle McCord that looks like a guy that should have been recruited to Ohio State. And they still have to play Boise State. Boise State, this weekend they're playing Washington State, a Washington State team that is really formidable from a scoring standpoint, and they could give a scare into Boise State. Boise State already has a loss as well. Boise State has to play UNLV. They have to play Oregon State, who maybe doesn't look very good. Northern Illinois, there looks like they're out of the picture, right? They beat Notre Dame, but they lose to Buffalo. They play NC State this weekend. Maybe they could get back into it. The overarching thing here is, to your point, there's a lot of football to be played. And Memphis has a bye week before they play a Friday night game against South Florida. That's advantageous. They have a bye week before they play Tulane on Thanksgiving. So the schedule from here on out doesn't look as daunting because, let's be honest, let's look through it. Middle Tennessee is horrendous. Absolutely terrible. One of the four teams in the country, one of one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, seven teams in the country who have not covered a football game yet. That's who they play this weekend. Bye week, South Florida on the road. North Texas, they look a little bit more vulnerable than maybe we anticipated. They come to town. Charlotte stinks. UTSA is not as good as they used to be. You get them on the road. Rice just got their doors blown off by Army. UAB, come on. And then you got Tulane. So the two biggest games left, they have rest time for both of them. And the margin for error is eliminated. But I still think you're feeling okay. Would you have preferred not to lose the Navy? Yeah, of course. But to your point, Boise State already has a loss. UNLV has a bunch of really tricky games ahead of them. The MAC, who knows what's going to happen in there. Bowling Green might be the best team in that conference.
And they've got like, what, three losses already?
They've got two losses.
Yeah.
Miami of Ohio has three losses. Northern Illinois just lost to Buffalo. So, you know, they've got a great win against Notre Dame, but they play NC State this weekend where they're around a touchdown underdog, so we'll see how that all plays out. Like, the Group of Five bid is wide open, and then you could look at Liberty, and here's the frustrating part for Memphis, Boise State, all these fan bases out there, because it feels like you're going to be tested a bunch of times. If Liberty beats App State this weekend, man, they might be headed to an undefeated season again. And what
they
was
still
really,
have ECU, right?
No, they beat them this past weekend.
Oh, God. That was really, oh, God.
Yeah. So That was really, because ECU went up 17-0 on him. I had ECU plus 7.5, and they won 35-24. And App State has gotten absolutely hammered by both Clemson and South Alabama. So you're wondering, is App State maybe not as good as we thought? We really, the collective we, the group of five, keep Liberty out of the playoff group. We need the boys from Boone to take care of business this weekend as a 3.5-point home underdog.
God, I don't think they can, man.
They're not very good.
They got like problems. Now, I want to say their problems are on offense, but it's like their defense is just as bad. And I mean, I guess Liberty's defense could be the cure that you need. But all right, let's recap what did actually happen in the week of college football. Let's hand out our college football awards. We will do that next. But before we do that, I want to remind you, it's President's Cup weekend. Yes, you may not know that, but it is indeed President's Cup weekend. And Birdies, our good friends over at 493 South Main Street, Suite 1, are going to participate as well. You can compete against your friends in match play, best ball, alternate shot, the same formats that they will use during the President's Cup. And right now, if you book 3 hours, you'll only pay for two. Birdies will set up 3 hours of competition using these formats. You'll only pay for two of them. They also have the hole-in-one challenge that still applies for course play. If you card a hole-in-one on the course that you play, you'll win a one-year membership to Birdies. And again, that one-year membership, you can also get it for $100 a month. Great deal. You can get 10 hours on the simulators for $100, as well as discounts on merch, food, and other great things that you can check out at golfatbirdies.com. President's Cup, Premier League, college football, NFL, it's all on tap. It's a loaded weekend of sports, and you can enjoy it at Birdies, where they have three golf simulators, great TV selections. You can even play your rounds while you're watching your game with the sound. All at golfatbirdies.com. Follow them on Instagram at birdies901. When we come back, let's hand out the awards. We'll do it next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Coming up next segment, we'll get into the list. We'll tell you when Tony Allen's jersey will be retired at FedEx Forum. Also want to get into a little bit of Heisman conversation. But before we do any of that, let's get into our weekly awards. Let's start with first our team of the week. I'm not even just saying this because I was heavily invested in the Vols and I was going to pay to see my eyes be wrong. I just thought what Tennessee did was very impressive, because if I tell you that Tennessee beats Oklahoma, let's say 45-35, I don't think you're that surprised. But the fact that Josh Heupel was able to trust his defense, manufacture an offense that didn't really put the ball in jeopardy, except for when they just put it on the turf, but they didn't really run like a lot of high-risk plays, and they just like maturely went on the road, came away with the win, trusted their defense, and just clearly like soundly beat Oklahoma. I was just very impressed, because that's something we've not seen Tennessee do, even under Heupel, because we've seen them have big wins, like the Alabama win, but this was a different style of win, and I thought, to me, it showed that this team is more than just, you know, 10-2 good. This team could actually have a say in what actually happens this year.
Yeah, and I think the defense, as you pointed out, was the big pull away for me, which is, and from a personal standpoint, we'll get to what we were wrong about. You were right, I was wrong, because I took Oklahoma plus the points, is that Nico didn't really need to play great for them to win this game. It was the defense. That defense is what I think get them to deep into the college football playoff. I mean, right now, if you look at the odds board, Tennessee has the 6th shortest odds to win the national championship. And I think that's fair. I mean, this is a team that is now minus 300 to make the college football playoff. And when you look at it, I think the offense can and will get better. And to go on the road against Oklahoma, and if someone told you that didn't watch a second of the game, Tennessee won 25-15. I think most people would be like, all right, well, they were a 7-point favorite. Okay, that, you know, cool. That score, like, for someone who bet Oklahoma, I almost turned the game off. I'm like, they're not covering. Like, this is not happening. Like, I know there was a chance late in the fourth quarter, maybe they could have got a backdoor. This game was dominated by Tennessee. You'd like to see a little bit more of a cleaner operation, but you look at this schedule moving forward, you know, bye week at WuPig, home to Florida, home to Bama, home to Kentucky, home to Mississippi State, at Georgia, but you're allowed to have a loss, and even maybe two losses now that you have this Oklahoma win. Now, the question is here, Oklahoma, when you look at this schedule, I mean...
Oh, I mean, 7-5's in play.
Are we sure they're going to a bowl game? Like, this weekend against Auburn, then you get Texas in your rivalry game, home to South Carolina the week after that, at Ole Miss, at Mizzou, home to Bama, at LSU. I mean, that's it's pretty hellacious there for them. So, you know, this win, even though it should, because you won this game on the road and it was a hostile environment, all of that, it might be one of those things where at the end of the day, people aren't going to be that impressed by, but just remember how much they dominated this game. This was very impressive by Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma clearly has problems on offense. The one thing that I would say is when you read the schedule, there's a lot of teams that we still kind of have question marks about. Even if we maybe feel like they're good, we don't really know. Like, we haven't seen Missouri really flash. They haven't gotten beat yet.
I think Missouri's got issues, man.
But like, they certainly feel like that they're playing with fire. You know, with Ole Miss, I mean, we'll see. They finally ended non-conference or whatever. They finally ended preseason last week.
I know it doesn't matter because it's all going to work itself out, so I'm not trying to get worked up on it. But if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm kind of annoyed that we're fifth in the rankings. I know it doesn't matter, but who... Okay, Texas went to Michigan and pasted them. They're fine being one.
And like, and they've pasted. They haven't even fooled around. Like, yeah, they even had like a sleepwalk.
I have no issues with Texas being one.
Yep.
And Georgia, they beat Clemson by 31. That needs to count for something. Tennessee should be number three. They beat NC State. I know NC State is falling apart on a neutral by 41 points. And they just went on the road to a top 15 team and won by 10 and really in more convincing fashion than that. Once again, it doesn't mean anything. Alabama plays Georgia this weekend. It'll figure itself out. But I'm just like a little annoyed if I'm a Tennessee fan. Like, really? Fifth?
Yeah, I mean, resume-wise, they deserve to be in front of.
I know it doesn't matter, but I don't know. It's just like they should be third.
All right, dumpster fire of the week. I mean, it's well documented here how I feel about Hugh Freeze, but it's even unraveling faster than even I could have dreamed of, Tim. You have...
How's their quarterback situation going?
Well, now on top of that, he's ruined two quarterbacks because you have to bench the other when you wanted to bench the rest. So now you're going to be juggling quarterbacks the rest of the year. Good luck with that. Then he has his post game in which he just throws the entire team under the bus. And then last night on Tiger Talk, he dropped this doozy of a line, and I'm paraphrasing. I know what the result that happened. Cal and Arkansas, they're good teams. I know what happened. But if we play Arkansas 10 more times, or play them 9 more times, we beat them 9 more times. It's like, I don't even know, like, what is that? Who does that even serve? Like, does any Auburn fan, does that make you feel better?
No. And, you know, if you follow recruiting, they're in on a lot of these high-profile guys, I'm sure because of the money that they're giving them. But, like, they've got this high-profile recruit, Deuce Knight, who is a, you know...
Deuce is a stud.
He's a stud, and he's committed to Notre Dame, but he's gone to Auburn, like, 4 consecutive weeks, and every recruiting analyst says he's going to flip to Auburn. Why hasn't he done it yet?
Well, I mean, this is the other
because
thing.
Your coach is out there throwing his quarterbacks under the bus.
And by the way, he's thrown every quarterback he's had under the bus, including Chad Kelly. Like, that's just what he does. And
like, is that what you want if you're a prospective high school kid? I don't know. Like, look, I get it. Playing in the SEC is appealing. And Auburn, not that long ago, won a national championship game. But when you've got this dude down there just filleting his quarterbacks, and then, oh, by the way, I mean, I know bowl games don't really mean anything, but to go out and play Maryland and get absolutely curb stomped when they've got their backup quarterback in?
Well, then he's talking about, you know, everything was a perfect play call. Your best player is Jarquez Hunter. He had 11 carries. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, he should never have left Liberty. Liberty was the perfect spot for him because you're away from scrutiny. You can schedule your way to success. You can coach that. If he's going to have a talent advantage in that league, and you can coach it up enough to where, like, and it was the perfect spot. He just, his ego, man, he had to get back to the SEC, and this is, it's delicious to watch. I cannot enjoy it enough. we could also throw out just App State in general. They're a dumpster fire, but I don't know how many people care about that. But also, you had a Kent State. Kent State numbers.
Yeah, I don't want to go too crazy into it because no one cares. But Kent State is 0-4. The last two games they've played were to Tennessee and Penn State. They lost 136-0 combined and got outgained 1,458-178. They were outgained this weekend 718-66. And they've lost both their starting, they lost their starter and their backup quarterback. And they lost to an FCS team who I just looked it up is 1-3.
Yeah, not even their one win is against them.
their one win is like they are so god awful. Like the fact that they scored 24 points against Pitt, who's actually a pretty decent team week one, is a borderline miracle. I just, those numbers are, it puts into perspective once again. As you go down the weeds here, like into the weeds, like maybe San Diego State's going to ultimately be good because Sean Lewis turned Kent State into a respectable program.
A bowl game team.
Yeah.
What is traditionally thought as one of the worst jobs you can possibly have in the country. All right, Heisman winner of the week. I'm going with our boy Blake Horvath, and I'm not even rubbing it into Memphis. I mean, he was awesome. But
he was phenomenal.
If you take away the 90-yarder, the 60-yarder, and the 47-yarder, Memphis did a pretty good job containing him. I think his longest run after that was 8.
Hey, just remove those.
Yeah, if you take those 3 plays out, I also think the 8-yarder, I think it was a walk-in touchdown. I think it was just because it was 8 yards. He was incredible.
He was really good. And this new system they've got there, it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. If it were anybody other than Trent Dilfer, I would really fade them this week because it's a beautiful sandwich spot off a big win with Air Force waiting in the wings, but I don't know if I can get there. Can I trust that UAB is properly prepared?
No, if anything, I'm almost like, it almost makes me want to just take, I know it's this dumb, you just saw it, don't take it, but like I think that UAB is going to have a really tough time stopping that.
Yeah, when it's humming, man, as we saw early on in the AAC tenure of Navy, it's really hard to stop. When they have a good quarterback, when they've got a system going, it's hard to stop, as Memphis saw last weekend. I gave mine to the Tennessee defensive line.
Yeah, they were incredible.
They just wreak havoc, man. I knew they were good, but I had my skepticism. And I know Oklahoma's got some injuries on the offensive line, but my God, they were crushing them.
Yeah, it wasn't just like, oh, they were in the backfield at the snap. It was purely like a mauling. All right, we're going to get into some more Heisman talk later, actual Heisman talk, because I think there's a couple of interesting questions to discuss. Tim's looking at some value out there. But this is always one of my favorite. Most college football moment of the week. I mean, yes, I'm obviously biased because I had Baylor +2. But ooh, Baylor's defense on the Hail Mary, It was honestly just as bad as Auburn's was on 4th and 34 against Bama. Like, they were just playing like coverage. I have no idea what was happening.
How do you let a guy get behind you not once but twice? They dodged.
Correct.
The bullet.
They should have hit the Hail Mary the play before.
It hit the receiver in the chest, and then they don't contain Shador Sanders, and they let him roll all the way out. Like, how does your edge let him roll out that quickly? By the way, just a quick aside, that was one of the most insane passes I've ever seen.
Oh, that was such, when you
going
saw from
against
the,
his body, oh, yeah, and he's just like zing,
the spider cam, when you like saw the footwork he had and when he let it go, like, yeah, that was a heck of a throw.
Yeah, I don't know, I mean, and here's the thing, I bet Baylor this weekend.
Oh, I'm all. The only thing I'm worried about is, are they on quit watch?
Yeah, that's my worry, no doubt. But it is like a rally the troops, our coach is going to get fired game. Maybe they want him fired, but BYU coming off of that high of beating Kansas State and like what was, you know, for me, having BYU plus 7 was very nice to watch. But if you actually dive into that game late night, they had a scoop and score. They had a punt return.
A punt return off a muff punt.
It was like 38-9, and it's like, eh. I mean, Parker Fleming at Statso War on Twitter puts out a graph every week. How well did the winning teams fare, like from a net rating standpoint? And they were like in the negatives.
BYU yeah, no, I mean, was. It was one of those ones where it's like, I get I was wrong, and Avery Johnson has some problems throwing the football. But that was also a very frustrating game if you were sitting there with Kansas State, because down to down, it felt like Kansas State was the better team, but that's why we play the games. You know what I mean? Like, those plays count.
And that's why I love situational spots so much. Baylor coming off of this loss, how do they respond? That's a question and a worry. But BYU, now 4-0, ranked, one of just two unbeatens left in the Big 12. Now you go on the road, 11 a.m. local kick time in Waco. Like, brutal. Go from elevation down to Waco. I don't know what the weather's going to be. I imagine it'll be sticky down there in Waco. I was texting you about this. The TCU versus CW rivalry mm-hmm. is something that I didn't know I needed.
Yep.
But I am so happy it's in my life. For those who missed it, I think on Thursday or Friday, TCU put out some sort of video that basically was crapping on their game being on the CW. Because the ACC has a deal with the CW, and SMU-TCU was picked by CW. Then SMU goes out and mops the floor with TCU, dropping 66 on them. And all the CW does...
And their coach got tossed.
I didn't know the CW had a Twitter feed. It tweets out the score with 9 seconds of the Dawson's Creek theme song.
You put some respect on Paul Cole's name.
To be over. That's all it did. It just showed the score. And I was like, God, that is lovely. Only college football.
There were two other great college football moments that I think you and I might have been the only people watching. In the San Jose State, Washington State overtime period, we had dueling interceptions. Like, that was just the most like peak college football. Like,